My name's Adam Farnsworth. I'm the campus minister in Tallahassee with the Ambassadors for Christ, and you were at our Slaying Introverts class. I'm going to start us off with a prayer, and then we'll go from there. Father God, I'm so grateful for the chance to come and talk about how each of us can serve your kingdom better, Lord, whether we're, regardless of what our personality is, regardless of what our background is and where we've come from and in our histories, Father, I pray that we would each be focused on learning how we can be yours and learning how we can serve you to the best of our abilities and more importantly, to the best of your abilities. We love you. We trust you. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, cool. So our theme for the workshop, obviously, is slaying giants. You know, it's the idea, like Robert talked about last night, that when we make progress, when we decide, when you are convicted, when you make the choice that I am going to give my life to Christ and I'm going to live for Him, really live for Him, and do the hard things that He calls me to, then Satan puts up roadblocks. There's an opposing force at work trying to stall our progress. And those are the giants that we're talking about. And each of you are here. We're all here because we want to be effective for the kingdom. That's our goal. That's what we have in common. And God will win through us, but we're always going to meet resistance. And for me, one of the big giants I've had to get over is insecurities about my personality. I am an introvert. My name's Adam. I'm an introvert. It almost sounds like a confession. Thank you. So, you know, the idea is, you know, I was looking up examples. I was trying to find examples of introverts in the Bible. And so I Googled examples of introverts in the Bible. And in the top five choices I got, is it sinful to be an introvert as a Christian? And do Christian introverts need to be fixed? And so I felt a little justified in my insecurities about going into ministry as an introvert. I'm like, well, fantastic. Thank you. And I could relate to that because when I got to the ministry, I was a part of Len Stringfellow's ministry in Tampa. You know, God help me. And so we get there and he was a total jerk. You know, I get there and he was this, I mean, we did our pre-marriage counseling with him, and when we did our personality profile, I am as drastically different. Like, I'm a polar opposite from Lynn. And so I get there, and he's in my face, and he's obnoxious, and he's loud, and he's telling me it's not about me, and, you know, that's not what I'd heard in youth group. You know, that wasn't what I learned. And he's telling me I've got to go reach out to people. I'm like, well, easy for you to say. You can go sell anything to anybody. You know, he made, you know, like a gajillion dollars selling textbook covers. You know, like, he can sell anything. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, well, you're a salesman. I'm going to let you do that. And I'm trying to wrap my head around what it means to reach out to the people around me. Because it was the first time I'd heard that that was part of a Christian's job, right? That's crazy. Like, that's pretty central. But I hadn't heard about that yet. And so I've got Lynn, you know, shoving it down my throat all the time that we've got to reach out, we've got to reach out. And the whole time I'm making these excuses. I'm watching him do it. And as I watch him, I'm learning nothing. Because in my head, I've got this mantra going over and over again. Well, yeah, that's Lynn. You know, he can do that. But I couldn't just walk up to somebody and start talking to him. You know, I'm an introvert. That's not what I do. And then I start coming to these retreats, you know, and we meet the Coxes. I'm like, oh, great. You know, like, I'm now supposed to live up to Robert and Carrie. You know, and then I meet Donnie, you know, and TC and Wes. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, surely someone around here has done ministry and not been as outgoing, not been as, it hasn't been as easy. Crowds haven't been as easy for them. And I remember there was a real turning point for me. I was listening to a lesson by Carrie. And there was a guy in his ministry a while back named Chewy. And he talked about how he was super shy and he would just stay in his room and play video games all the time. And he said when Chewy became a Christian, what he decided to do was he started making these mix CDs on his computer. And people could come by and he'd make them for free, but you had to sit and talk with him. You couldn't just come by and pick it up. Like, you had to sit there and talk with him while he made it. And that was how he got people in. He wouldn't just walk up to people on the street. So that was his excuse to get people in. And then he would just have a conversation with them. And I thought, man, how cool, like how creative that even though you're shy and even though you're nervous about talking to people, he came up with a cool idea to do it anyway. And that really convicted me. I thought, man, am I even making an effort? You know, am I really trying? Am I really trying to get creative and find ways to use my strengths and use my personality, even though it's different than some of these other guys that are doing ministry? And so I decided to go into ministry and I went through school and it was good. I learned a lot of things, but the problem was I disengaged for those 2 years. I went up to Harding and I got a Bible degree and I was grateful for the education, but afterwards, you know, I'd been out of ministry effectively for that time. And so I came back and all my old insecurities resurfaced. You know, I was trained now, but I was still really nervous. And so I got into ministry in Tallahassee, and then I was really having a hard time, and a lot of my insecurities were resurfacing. So I went up to Wentzville, and I met with the, it was ACB at the time, RCM, you know, and hung out with you guys and learned. And I was just trying to mimic what Carrie did. So I started cross chats, and I'd heard him say before, don't mimic the behavior, you know, mimic the heart, you know, do the heart. I'm like, okay, great, we're going to do what you do. And so I just started doing the things they did. I tried to put on similar events, and I tried to do some of the things similar to what he did, and tried to become Carrie Light, you know, like just not the introvert version of Carrie. You know, I was thinking like, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. And I tried that, and it still wasn't working. I was still dealing with my insecurities of, you know, I'd go out on campus. So I take a class on campus, right? I take a bowling class because I'm going to reach out and I'm going to force myself. I'm going to get creative and force myself to interact with students on campus, because walking up to them randomly in the union wasn't working. You know, I'd sit there awkwardly and they'd put their headphones in, and we'd just kind of sit with each other at this two-person table, you know, until they decided to leave. And so I take this bowling class. And I'm pumped. I pump myself up for it. And my first day, I pray outside the doorway, and I walk in, and we're sitting in this gymnasium, and all the kind of the leisure classes are there. And so it's kind of an orientation type deal. And these guys directly in front of me, this is an exact quote from their conversation. One guy turns to the other and goes, "Hey, this guy just tried to invite me to a Bible study." And that voice, and I'm like, "What?" And the guy next to him was like, "Yeah, what a loser." And it's like scripted, like that's made up, like people don't really talk like that, right? But this happened right in front of me, and I just pumped myself up. You know, I'm gonna take this risk. I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna be an extrovert, and I'm gonna go talk to somebody. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so I stuck it out. I wanted to just walk out the building. I wanted to just leave and say, well, that didn't work. But I stuck it out. I stayed in there, and over time, I got to know the people in my lane and the people in my class, and five of them ended up coming to church, and we still have a connection with a few of them. But just getting creative and forcing myself into that mold, into that behavior really helped. But more importantly, going in and deciding I wasn't going to come off it. You know, even though I couldn't be Carrie, even though I couldn't be Lynn, even though I couldn't be Donnie or Clint or Wes or any of these extroverted guys, it didn't matter, because like Robert and Wes talked about, God's here. Like, God's no different. The God that lives in my heart is no different than the God that runs through them. You know, it's the same power. It's the same deal. And I thought about in Philippians 2, 5 through 8. It says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ, who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. You know, this idea of humbling yourself, this idea of being like Christ and your dying to yourself, it really took me a while. It took me a long time to get over. It's a prideful thing to say that God can't work through you. It's a really prideful thing to say that I am the anomaly. You know, I'm the one, I have managed to accumulate the personality that God cannot work through. That's a very prideful thing to say. I thought of it, I wouldn't have said those words, but my mindset I would have thought of as humble, as realistic, as acknowledging my weaknesses, but really it was pride. It was proud to say, that I couldn't do what these other guys were doing. You know, that I couldn't do what Jesus said. I do greater things than he would. Who am I to call him a liar? And so it took just humbling myself and recognizing I don't know what this is going to look like, and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to put myself in situations where I have to act, and God will come through because that's what he promised. And so my goal, you know, as we talk today, I don't know, some people in here are introverts, some people in here aren't, and they have introverts that they know and love, and that's cool too. My goal for each of you is to help you help you become more effective in your ministry, or help you learn how to understand your introvert friends and get to know them better, and help them move past some of the insecurities and stuff that goes on there. Not everything I say will apply to every introvert. You know, I don't pretend to like have this. Humanity can't be divided into two groups and you nail every one of them with one description. But I think a lot of it will be helpful, and I hope you guys will take a lot from it. So what's an introvert? I'll give you two examples from last night. It was perfect. It was like Robert set them up for me. Introverts do not like when the script is broken. You know, I come into an interaction and I've got some expectations and you need to meet those expectations. And if you break them, then I'm going to have some issues. I'm going to flounder a little bit. And so last night, Alex, are you in here? Where's up? Yeah. Okay. So last night, Alex is looking past me. And I don't know that I've met Alex before. I don't think so. I don't remember like what ministry you come from, but he's looking past me and he gives a really warm smile. And he's going, I don't know who you were greeting, but he was so excited to see this person. And I thought it was me. And like, I meet a lot of you, right? Like I teach occasionally, you know, I'm a campus minister. So it's not unusual for someone to come to me and I don't remember their name or where they came from. And so I return that warm smile and I give him a hug and I see his name tag. I'm like, what's up, Alex? And then I realized to my horror that there was someone behind me who was also greeting him warmly. I'm like, oh no, no. So Alex, I haven't told you this. I haven't talked to you again since that moment because I was so horrified by what I'd done. But I love you, and I'm glad you're in here. Thank you. And then Robert gives us 30 seconds to go and meet someone new, right? And so Crystal and I look at each other, and we're like, okay, let's do this thing. And so we go, and we meet someone new, and we talk with them, and then the conversation ends. And the 30 seconds is long gone. I mean, we're at 45 seconds easy here. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, this is just chaos. Like, there's no, what am I supposed to do? Like, I met my person. What are you expecting of me? And so, it was horrifying. And so this idea is, you know, the idea is it's hard. It's hard sometimes to when the script is broken. The core idea of what an introvert is, who an introvert is, introverts recharge alone. You know, when you think about those moments when you're stressed out, when you're over in over your head, when you're overwhelmed by the situation, you know, ask yourself, do I need to get off by myself and just think things through, or do I need to get some buddies and go have some fun and unwind? And that's your answer to whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. It's all introverts aren't these like, you know, hermits that just would live in a little leper colony if they could. You know, you can be very personable. You can enjoy being around people. But if your recharge time, if your time when you've got to fill your tank, do you do that by going out with buddies or do you do that by getting off on your own and killing a stack of books, you know, or whatever it is, you know, and for me, that's very much what it is. I'd gladly leave all y'all and go to the beach. That'd be fantastic. So that's what it's like. And so to compare it, we've got one of our main student leaders in our ministry. His name's Gerard. And we left, a lot of us left last summer for a time. I came up here and trained for a while, and there was just a weekend where no one was here. And Gerard is extremely extroverted. And so Gerard calls everyone up, realizes no one's there. I got his permission to tell the story. And he's a tech guy. And so to be an extrovert, you've got, like, we have needs. As humans, you have to have companionship. You've got to refill your tank. And so he got to the point where he couldn't contact anyone except the bad influences in his life. And so rather than do that, he throws on a blue polo shirt and khaki shorts, and he walks into a Best Buy and goes for the next 2 hours, dispenses advice to the people at the Geeks Walk Out. And that's what it took for him. You know, it's like That is the essence of an extrovert. Like when you're at that point where you have to recharge, you need it. And I've had times, honestly, I've taken a zero on a book report because it was too draining for me to go and present it. You know, I said, just give me the F. I'm good. No problem. You know, I've had times where I've really contemplated feigning illness, you know, instead of preaching. Like this, I'm shaking right now. You know, like it's when your need is there, you know, when you need to recharge, we'll go to great lengths. And so the problem with that is if you don't understand how you tick, or you feel guilty about the way you work, or you don't understand how the people around you work and the need that they have, you can abuse that or you can ignore it and end up with some really bad consequences. You know, as extroverts, a lot of times, you know, I mentioned Gerard had an outlet where he could have been with friends, but they weren't the friends he needed to be with. And had he been in a different place, he would have gone there because he needed that. He needed to recharge. And he would have gone to a negative influence to get that. And in the same way, and we'll talk more about this with introverts. I don't want to steal TC stuff for extroverts, but we'll go to some unhealthy places as well. So let me give you some tendencies. Again, not absolute rules. You don't disqualify as an introvert if these don't fit you, but these are some struggles of introverts. All right, so I was introduced to this one, and it shook my world this past summer when I was with Lynn and Carol. The idea of an energy meter, and I'd never heard this before, even though I'd used it my entire life. When an introvert leaves their home, they're on a clock. A clock starts right at that moment, or a meter. You know, we have this tank, and every interaction after that point starts to sap away at that tank a little more and a little more and a little more. And it may seem really tame. Like, it may be things, when I go out to the mall, even if I don't interact with anyone, just being around that many people, just having that many voices in my head and that many conversations around me, I'm spent. After an hour, I'm done. I could just sit in a store for an hour. It doesn't matter. I'm stressed out. I'm ready to go home. You know, that's I feel like I'm at the end of my tank. You know, every time I get a text or a phone call or a message or whatever it is, every time something like that comes in and somebody makes what I consider a demand on me, even if that's not what they mean, but they demand my attention for a while, that's a little notch out of that tank. You know, it's a little bit more energy I've got to spend. And I'm guarding, up to through last summer, I was guarding myself all the time and protecting that energy. And so look, if I've got, you know, drive Crystal nuts, she'd look, I've got like 2,000 unanswered emails, you know, like, now I'm like, well, I read the important ones. Did you get back to them? Well, I mean, most of them. You know, there'd be days where I would go and, you know, someone would call and I'm just like, man, you know what? Not today. You know, I just had a lot going on. I'm spent. You know, this one's going to go unanswered. Or a text. And sometimes those were okay. You know, and it wasn't that big a deal, and it kind of validated it. There were other times when one of our other student leaders told me she would have been in our ministry 3 months earlier if I had answered a phone call that she gave me. But that day I was just spent. I don't remember it, but I'm assuming I was exhausted and didn't answer it. And she really wanted to, she'd found out about us and wanted to be with us, but was too shy to come in without, you know, knowing the minister first. And so there's times when that's really a bad thing. You know, when you protect that energy bank, you know, it really is, it can lead to some bad results. It can lead to some hurting some people's feelings and ignoring people. It's easy to feel out of place when you are in a large group, or it's easy to feel like you don't have a lot to contribute. You know, I'll sit at a table, and even as the minister, there's times where I'll sit at a table and say it's a long, you know, it's not unusual for us to take 20, 30 people out to a restaurant. And I look and I just marvel at the people that can just run the table. You know, they can just run, like, they're in five or six conversations at once, and they seem to know what's going on with all of them, and they're having a great time. For me, that's crazy. Like, I just can't even imagine being able to do that. It's very difficult to track different threads of different conversations as we go. And when people expect me to do that, I get a little irritable. I get a little frustrated, and I get a little envious of the people that that can, again, can just command the whole table and keep track of it all. Multitasking can be a struggle. You know, when you don't have time to think through transitions, when you switch from one thing to another and you don't get any warning about it, that can be very difficult. I was on a road trip. How many of you guys know Wes Waddell? A lot of you guys know Wes. All right, so Wes, I was on a road trip with him, and we were coming back, and I got to a section. It's pouring rain. I don't know the area, and I've got to make a transition from this lane over to this one. I have to make it in this time. I've got like a quarter mile, or I'm missing it, and I got to go way back. And so I turn the radio down because I have to think, and I can't have that many voices in my head. I have to understand what's going on, and there's too much stimulus. And so Wes looks at me, and he makes eye contact, and he cranks it right back up. I was like, what are you doing? And I missed my exit. I was so mad. I mean, I just stewed. I didn't talk to him the rest of the ride. I was so mad. I was so mad. And it really wasn't that big a deal. I hadn't explained to him why I'd turned the radio down. He didn't know what my motivation was. I think he would have done it even if he'd known. But for him, it's like, what's the big deal? You know, what's the problem? Why would you even care? But for me, it was this idea of this overstimulation. I've got to get this done, and there's too many things going on. I've got to turn the noise down. And we have to do that sometimes. There's times where we have to turn the noise down in whatever setting and try to work through that and process through. Transitions can be very difficult. You know, it's just hard to multitask smoothly like that. All of these are very confusing for extroverts. All these things I talked about are very weird in practice when someone sees them going on. And again, you know, you can be at times disrespectful towards them and not understand when you don't understand what's going on. So I share these things just again so you can understand a little better. You know, some of them we just got to get over as introverts, and some of them you can be a lot more respectful with how you treat it. We also have some advantages. Introverts can be very effective in identifying heart issues. As someone who is willing to take time to go deeper, as someone who has a very logical progression, you know, Robert talked last night about intensifying the consequences, right? And taking things to their logical end. And so we are very good at figuring out the root of what's going on and hearing heart issues through the mess. And it's very helpful. One of our favorite and least favorite things when we were in the ministry in Tampa were our talks with Carol, because they always went one way. You always heard at the end of it, because we were always telling her something dumb that we wanted to do and justify. And at the end, she would always say, "How's that working for you?" That was her go-to. "How's that working for you?" And I hated hearing that because it wasn't working well at all, but I wanted to keep doing it. And But that's such a cool way to think about it. And it's really, we're really good at intensifying consequences and recognizing and thinking, not getting caught up in the distractions and recognizing this is the root of what's going on. And so that can be a strength. That can be a really cool thing, especially in ministry. Introverts are very good at seeing both sides of issues and helping others to see it as well. You know, because I hate interruptions, because I hate being interrupted myself and having to change my track, I also hate other people being interrupted. And so when I'm mediating, when I'm helping a conversation, I'll prevent that and I'll help people speak their whole mind and guide that out and let people get everything out and then deal with the other person and let them get everything out. Whereas, you know, if you're good at multitasking, you might let those conflicting things go on. And so, you know, it's a really good thing. It's served me well to be able to navigate those and to help people stay on track. So we're good at helping people see the other sides of issues and come together. And the last thing I thought about is we're really good at shutting up and sitting still with somebody. That's a really good quality to have. You know, honestly, there's people that will come in and we try to cultivate a really welcoming ministry. And so, when you come into our cross chat or whatever it is, if you're me, you're going to get really freaked out. Like, you're going to be really overwhelmed because a ton of people are going to come hug you and invite you to stuff and invite you to their home and try to include you in everything we're doing. And for me, like, I want to come in and get my bearings. Like, I want to figure out who some people are and figure out who I can trust and kind of work my way in there. And so I'm going to go and I'm going to sit off to the side. And I'm going to kind of just see things for what they are for a little bit. The introverts are much better able a lot of times to go and just sit next to somebody. Just sit next to them and slowly build that trust and get in there and get to know them a little better. I am way more comfortable. You know, as one of the guys I was talking to, I lost his name. Anyway, there's one of the guys in RCM, I was talking to him and we had like a 5-minute conversation and I know so much about him now and he knows so much about me. Like, that's so easy. I can sit down with someone and we can go deep. Like, that's so easy. But you give me a table full of 12 people and I'm doing everything I can just to hold it together. You know, I'm doing everything I can not to feel like I'm on the fringe of that, not to feel like I'm getting left out. And so it's a real strength to be able to just sit down with somebody and be still and be with them and get to know them a little bit and help them feel more comfortable. So all that to say, you know, you can see by discussing these things, you know, it's easy to see where some insecurities would come up with ministry. Because when you picture ministry, when you picture specifically outreach campus ministry, a lot of times you picture walking up to strangers. A lot of times you picture, you know, holding these giant root beer keggers, you know, in these massive events where you've got to entertain and host and bring people in And you know, that's what you hear a lot of times. And it's true that as an introvert, a lot of times I'm more comfortable working in the background and support roles, but I'm no less effective. I'm not less effective as a leader just because that's where my comfort zone is. And I think that's where, you know, that's really where I want to hit for the rest of this time, is that all of those things I just talked about are true in my experience. All these things are true of introverts. And it's something that we work through and we have strengths and we have weaknesses just like anyone else. But what's most important in all of that is that you have the God of all creation, the one who spoke existence into the universe, trying to reach souls through you. And nothing in your personality can prevent that. Nothing in what you want or where your comfort zone is or what you feel like doing or what you've experienced in the past can stop God from working through you. And that's a powerful realization when you really own that, when you accept that, and then you find those moments when you realize, I am terrified of this and I'm going to do it anyway. And that's okay because my God's going to deliver me. That's a powerful moment because He does, and He does really cool things. And there will be times when someone puts on their headphones and totally rejects you and you feel completely validated for all your fears. And there will be times when you go and you sit next to someone and they just pour their soul out to you. And they're at cross chat the next week and they're baptized 3 weeks later. You never know until you try it. But I want to give you an example of that. Moses was, his first interaction with God is beautiful for me because I feel it. I mean, you look at like Peter, right? When Peter's with Jesus and he's in the boat and Jesus says, "Hey, Peter, come to me, or Peter, you know, Jesus is walking on the water. He's like, hey, Peter, come on. Boom, out of the boat. First thing, right? No problem. Extrovert. Like, I can do that. Didn't even think about it. Like, it may have been a terrible idea. Doesn't matter. Jesus said it, I'm hopping out there. You know, if Jesus is in trouble, I'm pulling out the sword. You know, charge into battle. No problem. Even if it's the wrong thing, right? He's ready to go. But Moses' first interaction with God, he's at the burning bush. His first six things he says to God are excuses, right? They're reasons why he can't do this thing that God has called him to. And he's trying to, I can just watch him. I can watch him trying to process and figure out before he commits and make sure this thing is safe. God is talking to you. Like, why do you need to process this? But I feel it. I understand, because it used to drive Lynn nuts. Because we'd be on campus and be like, hey, go talk to that guy. I'm like, well, who is he? I've never met him before. Well, do you think he's a student? Like, he's in the union. Yeah, he's probably a student. Yeah, I don't care if he's a student. Like, I'm just processing, right? The whole time I'm trying to figure out, is it safe? Is it safe? Well, what do you do when you do it? I don't just go and talk to him. You know, and I'm coming back with, well, I don't know. I've never done this before. Well, just try it. And we're going back and forth. And the whole time, I don't really need the answers to these questions I'm asking. What I'm doing is I'm buying myself time. I'm trying to make sure it's safe. I'm trying to make sure that I can understand the situation to the point where I can eliminate as much risk as possible, and I can go in there as prepared as possible so that I don't fall on my face, because that would be horrifying. And I'll tell you, and I've lived it. Like, trust me, I know what it's like. The first Bible study I ever did with someone, I use the air quotes because that's scary. I was really convicted. You know, I'd been watching Lynn work, and I said, I'm going to go do a Bible study with somebody. So I'd been talking to this girl at Boston Market. I used to go there every week before our praise time, and I was getting to know her, and so I asked her, I just out of the blue, I'm like, hey, would you want to do a Bible study sometime? It was like the most random thing of like, hey, I'll take the quarter dark with green beans and hash and mac and cheese, and would you like to do a Bible study with me sometime? Like, that's my transition. And so, so suave. And so she says yes, and I'm flabbergasted because I really didn't expect that to work. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll be back here, you know, when are you off? And we work out of time. And so we get together at Boston Market, because that's where she most wants to be in the world, right? But that was my awesome suggestion. So she's like, yeah, sure, whatever. So we get to Boston Market, and she starts talking about her life and what's going on. And just, she's obviously dying to open up to someone. And I pull out my Bible, and she says, you're not really pulling out a Bible on me, are you? And I said, nope. I put it back down. This is my first Bible study. And I put it back down, and we had this long conversation where I accomplished nothing, but I was so horrified by what I'd just done. And I'm sitting there internalizing all this and thinking and running through in my head and just beating myself up over it. I get what it looks like to fall on your face. But it's okay to get your bearings. It's okay to try to figure out what's going on. But if you use that as an excuse to eliminate the opportunity, if you use that, you're never going to be able to take risk out of it. You're never going to be able to eliminate all the risk. You're never going to get to the point where you feel comfortable or where you feel like everything's safe, because it wasn't meant to be safe. People are messy, and they're going to shut you down sometimes. They're going to do weird things, and they're going to break the script. And that's terrifying, and it's frustrating, and it's weird to deal with when that's where you're coming from. But the point is that God provides. You know, and I think about when Moses had all these excuses, and he's trying to eliminate the risk, and he's trying to comprehend, and he's trying to get what God is calling him to, and God's saying crazy stuff. He's saying he's got to talk to the ruler of the most powerful nation in the world. This guy doesn't want to talk to anybody. He has to go to the most powerful ruler in the world and talk to him. And he says, look, I'm terrified. I'm slow of speech. I don't know what to say. I've got to stutter, whatever. Like, I'm scared to talk to this guy. And God doesn't say, he says, here's your brother Aaron. And instead of saying, I'm going to send him instead, God says, you go talk to Pharaoh and I'll send Aaron with you. He doesn't take him off the hook. He acknowledges, he sees how scared Moses is. He sees how afraid he is and how uncomfortable he is. But instead of putting the extrovert in charge, he says, I'm going to send you anyway and I'll send you some help. I'll throw you a bone. And Moses does, and he goes and he talks to Pharaoh, and Aaron has some side notes, and he goes and plays his role. But Moses goes and he talks to Pharaoh and triggers the greatest exodus. And like, this is a reference point for the rest of the Bible. How many times do you see God talking about, I'm the God who brought you through the Red Sea. I'm the God who delivered you from Egypt. The Egyptians you saw yesterday, you will never see again. Some of the greatest quotes in Scripture are about a guy, an introvert, who sucked it up and went and talked to Pharaoh, and God did amazing things for him. And he didn't strand him. He sent him the help he needed. He sent him an extrovert to go along and give him some help and give him some confidence, but he still had the responsibility. He wasn't exempt from the responsibility just because he was afraid to go. I think about the other time, you know, when when Joshua's fighting the Amalekites, and Moses is out there and he's watching on this hilltop. And Exodus 17, 10 through 13 says, Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. So battles take a long time, right? Like, this is not a 10-minute, it's not Braveheart. You know, it's going to take a really long time for this battle to actually go on in real life. And so Moses' hands grow tired, and it says they took a stone and they put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. There will be times, there are times in my ministry where I'm beat, where I'm spent. There will be times in all of your ministries, in all of your, I don't care whether you're a minister or not, if you're trying, if you're really trying to live this life for God, if you're taking risks and you're communicating with people and you're pouring into other people's lives and you're letting them pour into yours, it's going to be messy and you're going to get beat up and you're going to get tired. And there's going to be times when, as an introvert, you feel like your energy bank is just about spent. And what I had to realize, and what I want to help you realize, is that it is not your job to protect your energy bank. It is not your job to protect yourself and shield yourself from the people that need you. I was listening to Robert one time, and he quoted Marvin Phillips, who was his preacher, and Marvin said one time, he said, when you have the right fuel, you never run out of energy. And I didn't appreciate that when I first heard it. But after learning more and going through and experiencing some things, I started to realize, if I really do have the Spirit of the Almighty God living inside me, and I do, you know, I've surrendered to Him in baptism, I've given my life to Him, I'm trying my best to live for Him, I know I have the Spirit of God in me. At what point does He run out of juice? At what point does He get tired and have to go home? And it doesn't mean I don't take time. It doesn't mean that I don't do as Jesus did and go off and I do spend time alone and I do get my recharge and I do spend time with my wife and I do have Mondays that are sacred and no one can talk to me unless someone's either dying or getting baptized, right? Like, they know that. I have my opportunities. Yeah, dying one way or the other, right? And so, whether they come back to life, that's a different thing. So I do protect myself and I do make sure that I have opportunities to recharge, but it's not my job to ignore your call so that I can stay safe. It's not my job to ignore the person across the union because I'm afraid to talk to them. It's not my job to protect my energy bank. That's God's. I entrusted that to Him when I was baptized, or I should have. And so I've got to recognize that He's in charge of that now, and I don't get to call the shots about that. And so if He presents me with an opportunity, He did it for a reason. And I've got to trust that He's going to provide. He's either going to give me the strength to go out and do it on my own, or He's going to send someone with me who's going to hold up my arms and help me win that battle. And He's going to be enough, and somebody's going to prop me up. And there have been times where I have had nothing left. I mean nothing. And I've had guys hold up my arms and lift me up and help me through that time. You know, your personality is a gift. It's not an excuse. And there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. And there's nothing wrong with being an extrovert. And this isn't like a feel-good, huggy, you know, you're good, I'm good. This is real. There's nothing wrong with your personality. There are some problems with the way you use it. There's some problems with the excuses you make for it. And there's some problems with the excuses I make for it. But there's nothing wrong with how God made you and who He created you to be. It's not an excuse. It's a gift. In Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis talks about personality. And he talks about how Christ, you know, Christ describes us as salt, right? Salt to the world. And he says, you know, if no one had ever tasted salt before, right? And you gave them a pinch of salt and you put it on their tongue. And you said, we use this to season our food. And they'd say, well, that's dumb. Everything would taste like salt, right? Like, it's such a sharp taste. It's such a strong taste. I would assume that if you put even a little bit of that on something, it would taste like salt. It's overpowering. But we know something else is true. Anybody who loves to grill or cook, you know, if you put a little bit of salt on something, it becomes even better. Like, it becomes more like itself. That steak tastes more like steak. That onion tastes more like onion. It makes everything better. It doesn't taste more like salt. It tastes more like itself. And that's what Christ does for us. We don't all end up looking exactly the same, right? I mean, praise God. Like, that would be awful. You know, if the Bible says if we were all ears, how would we see? You know, and so Christ doesn't make us all the same. He brings out our true flavor. We are very boring without Christ, honestly. You know, this world preaches you should be yourself, you know, and there's like the Dr. Pepper commercials that crack me up every time I see them. They're like out of one, like I'm unique. And then you watch the commercial and they're all drinking the same drink, wearing the same shirt and talking about how unique they are, right? Like, do you receive the commercial you're making? And this is what the world sells you. You've got to be yourself. You've got to rebel against anything that tells you what to do or how to be, because it's holding you down. Say no to the man. Well, when God's the man, you better say yes. Because when we're slaves to our past, when we're slaves to our passions, and that's what we are before Christ, when we're just victims of whatever jacked up family tree we come from or whatever hurts we've had in our past or mistakes we've made, you're really predictable. You are completely being steered by what's happened to you before. But when you're free in Christ, when you're free from that and you're not slaves to your passions anymore and you're not feeling like you have to do the things you've done before, you really become your own. You really become something special. You know, John 12:24 says, "Very truly I tell you, until a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life." If you will give yourself up, if you will give up the excuses that you've made in the past because of your personality, because of your hurts, because of whatever it is, if you'll stop making that the excuse and you'll die to that and you'll take the risks and you'll go out and you'll do things that are crazy, you really become your own because you're free from all that mess. You're free from that. There's no getting around the fact that service in Christ requires faith. You know, faith is a willingness to look like an idiot if Christ doesn't come through. It's the willingness to look foolish. It's, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to look really silly if God doesn't come through here. Right? If He doesn't do something miraculous, I'm going to look nuts. And I've done that, and it really does. It's incredible when He comes through, and so often He does. Crazy things happen. There's a point when the Israelite army is stalled out, and Saul is ruling, and he's scared, and nobody's moving. They're up against this Philistine army, and they don't know what to do next. They have stalled. They have succumbed to their fear. They've taken stock of the situation, and they've recognized this is a superior force, and I don't know what to do. And I've been there. I've been at this moment where I have sat for 15 minutes in a student union and looked around and taken stock and realized I do not have the emotional capacity to sit down next to someone and carry on a conversation that's going to lead to anything. I really felt that way. I mean, I just sat there and then left feeling like a failure. There's other times I've gone and I've done something different, and this is what Jonathan does. David's best friend Jonathan, the son of Saul, looks at the situation. He sees the Israelite army stalled out. He sees that they're afraid. And he takes his armor bearer, his follower, his disciple, and Jonathan says to his young armor bearer, "Come, let's go over to that outpost of those uncircumcised men. Perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few." "Do all that you have in mind," his armor bearer said. "Go ahead, I'm with you heart and soul." Jonathan looked at the same situation. He didn't have a smaller army to contend with. He didn't have a different situation than the Israelites who were so afraid. He looked at the same situation, the same scary situation, and said, "You know what? I'm going to go out. Maybe God will save me." There was a really good chance, by all physical standards, that he was going to go out and get slaughtered by the first guys that came across him. Right? That first outpost of 10 men that he came up against, he didn't have great odds against. But he went through, and him and his armor bearer wreaked havoc through the Philistine lines because he was willing to take a risk. Because he was willing to go out and do what seemed impossible and look foolish and maybe die if God didn't come through. And what's really cool is not only did he have the faith to take that plunge, not only did he have the courage to trust that God would provide, but his armor bearer says, "Do all that you have in mind. I am with you heart and soul." And there are people in your ministry that will watch you take these risks and do things that they know you're uncomfortable with. And then they know you can't do on your own, and they know you're doing something crazy and you're taking a risk. And they will say, "I am with you heart and soul. I will follow you." And we've watched people in our ministry who didn't want anything to do with us, you know, who were stuck in their ways, and they didn't go with us the first time or the second time or the third time. But eventually they watched us take all these crazy risks and they saw the amazing things happening, and eventually they were with us and they said, "I'm with you heart and soul." And they're taking the risks and they're doing the things that they always made excuses about before. It's so powerful. When we step out in faith, God sends people to follow us, and it's awesome. I'm going to wrap up with three absolutely vital tools for you or the introvert in your life. This is really important. Whether this applies to you or whether it applies to someone else, it's really helpful when an introvert is down, this is how you encourage them. This is how you, when an introvert is growing, this is how you grow, help them grow. The first thing, train yourself not to require constant praise. Train yourself not to require constant praise. Matthew 6, 1 through 4 says, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." It is very easy for us to internalize slights and to internalize when people don't give you praise. It's very easy because introverts think about situations and assess situations. It's so easy for us to read into it and assume motives and assume that people are thinking about us what they don't. You know, when I'm at the end of the table and nobody's talking to me and it's really because I'm not talking, I'm assuming that whole left to myself, I will always assume they are ostracizing me on purpose. I will always assume that I am boring and they just don't care what I have to say. That's my default because I'm always analyzing the situation. And so we've got to train ourselves not to be dependent on that, not to be dependent on praise. When we were in CIA Tampa, then one of the things we did all the time is he called them covert ops. And Lynn would send us on missions and we had to do things and the goal was no one could find out. That was the whole mission. You failed the mission if someone found out. And so maybe it was mopping the church floor. Maybe it was raising money for someone to get a root canal. Maybe it was it was helping somebody, you know, whatever it was. It was a mission where sometimes it was really as mundane as taking out the trash. And sometimes it was as huge as sitting by someone who was thinking about committing suicide. I mean, there were so many opportunities for this, but he would send us out. And the whole goal was we could not be discovered. And I learned to love the fruit of obedience. I learned to love service for service sake. I learned to love the opportunity to serve others and to bless others, even if they didn't know I had done it. And I didn't need that praise anymore. Do I love it? Absolutely. I went and got my wife Starbucks this morning. I've asked her like 6 times if it helped her day because it feels good to hear her say yes. I know it did. Right? Like everyone loves praise. It's not wrong to love praise. You're not an evil person if you enjoy being acknowledged for what you do, but you can't need it. You can't rely on that because if you need it, it will eat you up inside and it'll force you to do things that you really don't need to do. And so it's really important for us, probably for everyone, but especially for introverts, to train yourself by giving yourself covert ops. Give yourself opportunities to go and do things and make sure no one finds out about it. And I promise you it's such a blessing because you really get to enjoy what you do and it teaches you to want to do it more. Send anonymous letters to someone. You know, go and encourage them randomly and do what you need to do. Second thing, it is absolutely critical that we use our downtime effectively. Do things that truly recharge you rather than just entertaining or distracting you. When I went off to my freshman year of college, I loved to escape. When I needed to get away, when I was overwhelmed, it was porn and it was video games. And that was always what it was. And that was always what I would fall back to. And I flunked out really quick because that doesn't recharge you. You know, I've never played a video game for an hour and thought, man, I'm good. Like, I don't need to do that again for a week. Right? Like, I know, I'm offended that something interrupted me. I want to play for another 6 hours. Right? Like, you know, when I'm going through these things, it doesn't fulfill. It satisfies because it distracts for a moment. And then you're right back to the mess you were in before. You get your fix and then you're right back in it. It doesn't recharge you. And so these distractions that I've never killed a series on Netflix and thought, man, I'm great. Like that solved everything. You know, like I'm not worried at all about those things that were stressing me before. No, I just escaped for a while. And then I'm still empty at the end of it. And so it is absolutely critical that when you get those times to yourself, when you get those times to recharge, you really do use it to recharge. There's a guy named A.W. Tozer and he says, "Oh God, I have tasted thy goodness. And it has both satisfied me and made me thirsty for more. I have tasted your goodness, and it has both satisfied me and left me thirsty for more." That's how I feel when I spend time with God and His people. When I spend intimate time getting to know a brother better, or I spend time doing a Bible study with my wife, or praying to God and sharing with Him the things that I've done, Maybe I'd rather play Skyrim. Maybe I'd rather play Counter-Strike. Maybe I'd rather go and watch, you know, a series on Netflix or whatever it is. Maybe I'd rather do those things. But when I turn away from that and I say, no, I don't need that. When Crystal and I were first married, for a long time, for years, I told her that one of my needs was to get away and be able to play video games sometimes. And she respected that. Like, she let me have those times. And I've come to realize that's not a need. Like, that wasn't true at all. Like, I don't need that because it doesn't fulfill me. I like doing it. I'm not going to never play it again, but it doesn't fulfill me. What I do need is time with my God. And so I told her that. I didn't want to tell her that because now I got my, you know, I lost my opportunity to go and get away. But I was honest with her because that's what you do when you really want to serve. You're honest and you communicate your real needs. And so she calls me to that, and she helps me to remember the times when I've got to look to the right sources, and we need to be calling each other to that, and calling each other to the right sources and encouraging each other. Matthew 5:6 says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." If we're hungering, if we teach ourselves to hunger and thirst after those things, you will be filled, and you won't find yourself running dry. You're going to have what you need to fulfill the job He's called you to. Third thing, last thing. Don't use fatigue or insecurity as an excuse to disengage. Do not use fatigue or insecurity as an excuse to disengage. We have marching orders that apply to all of us and a world that will die if we don't fulfill them. You have a church that needs you, regardless of how you feel about yourself. That's true. God put you in the church for a reason, because they do need you. And it's selfish to take yourself away from them. And honestly, it doesn't do what it promises to. You know, there's times when I'm feeling overwhelmed and I just feel like I got to get away. Like, I need a week off of you people. You know, I just need to get away from you guys for a while. And then I'll come back and I'll have it all figured out. And I really do feel that way at the time, but it never does that. I never do feel better at the end of that week. I never do feel great, you know, at the end of it. I feel more isolated and I feel more alone and I feel more insecure because I've had a week to do nothing but think about all these things that I've assumed about you, you know, and the way you feel about me, right? Like, it never does what it promises. And so I want you guys to watch for red flags. If you hear these phrases come out of your mouth or the mouth of someone you love, you take stock with them and you try to talk to them about what's happening. If you hear someone say, "I'm not getting anything out of these lessons." If you hear someone say, "I'm feeling really burned out." If you hear someone say, "I need some time to get away and figure things out." If you hear someone say, "That's not my gift." If you hear any of those things, it doesn't always mean they're in some spiritual death spiral, but it does. It is a red flag. It is a warning that maybe this person's getting their fuel from the wrong place. Maybe this person, because there's really no reason to feel burned out. There's reason to feel tired. There's reason to feel emotionally exhausted. There's reason to feel overwhelmed by a situation. But if you're out of hope, if you're really feeling hopeless, that means you're getting your fuel from the wrong place. And we've got to figure out, that's not a slam. That's not trying to make you feel bad. It's just acknowledging that you've got to find ways to reconnect with God and with the people around you. And do it in the midst of community. Do it in the midst of community. You know, there was a guy we heard one time at a retreat, and he said, he talked about this trip he went on to this monastery in like Spain or something, and he spent like 3 weeks there, and everyone was really discouraged because they're like, "Man, I can't recharge by going to Spain. Like, I don't have that kind of bank. I can't get away. Like, my job's gonna fire me. Like, I can't do that. How am I supposed to recharge as a Christian if I gotta go to some monastery in Arizona or wherever?" You know, they were terrified of it. And I pointed them to Jesus, and I said, "Look what Jesus did." There was a point in Jesus' ministry where he was spent, and he went all the way across, he walked across a lake to get away from the crowds, and they followed him around. And as an introvert, I'm just like, that's awful. Like, that's just the worst thing ever. You know, if I get home and I got a student knocking on my door and I really came in with the expectation, they've broken the script, right? Like, I really thought I had my relaxation time and they're invading that. Oh, that's awful. And Jesus doesn't turn them away. He serves them and he heals them and he talks to them. And you know what he does right after that? He goes up on a mountain and he prays and he gets his time with God. But he didn't exit the community to do it. He didn't exit the mission in order to get fed. He trusted that God would get him through it, and then he went to that. When he needed in his most desperate moment to pray to his God to relieve him from the cross, to free him from the cross and not make him go through that, he took some of his closest friends who fell asleep. But still, he tried. And he prayed. But he stayed in community to do it. I urge you guys, as introverts or as friends of introverts, do not use your fatigue or your insecurity as an excuse to disengage. Stay in community while you figure it out. That's so important. Last verse, Joshua 1, 5 through 9. Success is much more about surrender than it is about having a certain personality. I didn't have to become an extrovert in order to be successful. I didn't have to change the core of who I was in order to be successful and to have victories in my ministry. I had to get over some excuses, and I had to surrender to God. Joshua 1, 5 through 9, Moses is giving some parting words to Joshua. He says, "No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, God says, so I will be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous because you will lead these people. You will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the laws my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be on it day and night. That you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night. Feed from the right places," right? "So that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Wherever you go. There's nowhere you can go personally, spiritually, emotionally, physically, where God will not be with you. And we will not work through you in incredible ways, and you will do greater things than our Lord Jesus Christ. He promises that because you've got His Spirit inside you. I encourage you guys, regardless of where you're coming from, personality-wise or what struggles you've had, surrender to God. You know, give Him opportunities to do great things. Take risks. Step out in faith. Do the things that are scary to you, and He will come through. You don't have to change who you are. You don't have to become Carrie. You don't have to become Lynn. You don't have to become me. You just got to become Jesus and get over it and serve Him. Thank you guys so much. I hope you're blessed by it.